We're going to start this week, as always, with a nice wee review.
Ah, wee review.
So this one says, funny, entertaining, and bloody brilliant.
Oh.
Yes. Long.
Thank you for that compliment of me personally.
This is specific. It does say this is specifically a review of Luke. It's a 5-star review. It says, long time listener, first time reviewer. I listen to Sci Guys in sporadic bursts, busy media editing life. And when I do, I always berate myself for not listening when episodes actually come out because they're always fascinating and informing to hear. Even Luke and Jamp's comedic responses have their benefit, though I'm not sure how Corey has the patience.
We are good with those comedic responses, aren't we?
Yes. My dad just started listening today and he asked me if we rehearse it all. And I was like, no, Dad.
I couldn't take two rounds of this. Just one is enough.
Are we that wooden?
Bless him.
The episodes where I had no clue about the topic made me feel smarter, and the episodes where I had some preliminary knowledge of the topic were still good for filling in the gaps. Definitely my favorite podcast out there. Podcast out there.
Hell yeah!
And that one is from Rubes. So thank you,
Rubes. Thanks, Rubes.
Thank you, Rubes.
Shall we get on with the show?
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, a show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jemp, and Luke Cutforth, and this time, special guest, Noah Fintz.
No offense.
This week, we're talking about J.K. Rowling's mortal enemy.
Is that trans people?
Oh, no.
I thought you meant specifically me.
That's why you're a guest, Noah.
Yes,
J.K. Oh, that's why he's here.
As it's Pride Month, I thought we'd do a couple episodes that have been quite heavily requested. This week, trans brains. Next week, the gay gene. So shall we
try? The gay gene.
The gay gene, yes.
Did we find it?
Next week. You'll find out next week.
No, next week. Okay.
Next week. Not yet.
We haven't found it yet.
Little tease.
We're writing a lot on them finding the gene.
Tori's got to find the gay gene between today and next week.
This is like when you start writing an essay about 10 minutes before it's due. I've been spending the past 20 years trying to find, like, you know, knowing I've had to find it, but this week I'll get down. Anyway, shall we start off with what gender identity is? Do you guys know what gender identity is?
We all have one.
Turfs don't.
That describes a lot of things.
Turfs don't.
Turfs don't believe in gender identity.
They're exempt from the rule.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. I can just hear the emails.
They just are.
Yeah, they just are. They're just women because they are.
I can already tell this was a bad idea for an episode topic. So gender identity, this is from the NHS, gender identity refers to our sense of who we are and how we see and describe ourselves. Most people identify as male or female. These are sometimes called binary identities. But some people feel their gender identity is outside of this binary, and some people feel it's different from their biological sex. Gender dysphoria is a discomfort with your gender, effectively. It's not a mental illness, but some people may develop mental health problems because of gender dysphoria. Good?
Oh, right. It was categorized as a mental illness for a while, though, wasn't it?
Yes, but then so was being gay.
Is it still?
Yes.
And then I guess so was being a woman and speaking too much. So.
Yes.
Lots of things have been mentioned.
Watch your tone. Watch it.
That's hysteria, by
Bring
the way.
Bring it all back, I say.
Actually,
hysteria. Hysteria from the womb.
Yeah.
It's from the womb.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why it's called hysterical.
Yeah, because
it comes from the womb?
The hist. Something about hist means womb in some other language.
Okay, so it's some other language.
Latin, maybe?
Latin, yes. What's funny about that? It's a
womb
different
panic.
Language.
It just means womb panic. So
they're panicking because
hysteria.
They have a womb.
It does
I'm
mean,
not even joking.
It does literally mean womb panic, and it is another language. It's the same root as hysterectomy. So it does it does literally mean womb panic. When women were acting irrationally, you could basically diagnose them with hysteria, which basically meant crazy lady, go to crazy house.
I feel some people still believe that.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Someone like you're on your period, that's
like
why you're
mad.
Like
our health secretary, Matt Hancock.
Well, that's why women aren't allowed to be in power, because they could just go crazy at any minute because of that woman
unlike
there.
Unlike the men. Definitely don't go crazy.
Yeah, lucky men have never started any wars for silly reasons.
Insane men we have in power right now. Oh, dear God.
So yeah, that's what gender identity is. So being trans in a medical sense is having gender dysphoria. Obviously, there's a lot more outside of the medical idea. We're not really going to get into that right now. We're just going to talk about like the sort of science behind it and what we've studied.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Nice. Nice. So obviously there is therapy for gender dysphoria. I'm going to get into that really quickly just because some things lead to some interesting topics like how hormones work and things like that. And then I'm going to talk about trans brains. So first off, you've got sort of surgeries and surgeries for gender dysphoria, basically to gender reassignment surgeries. Noah, you know a little bit about that, don't you?
I know a lot about that.
Do you want to give a rundown?
Give a rundown.
Yeah,
of
give
it.
A rundown of
well,
like.
Yeah, okay. People who are assigned female at birth that are either, you know, trans men or non-binary in like the masculine scale, a lot of the surgeries they can have, they could get their breasts cut off. Mm-hmm. That alleviates the chest dysphoria. They could also get phalloplasty or metoidioplasty was a type of a bottom surgery that gives, you know, a penis.
on a platter. Just gives you one. There you go.
That's how we all get one.
You pay lots of money for it. And then people that are assigned male at birth are either trans women or non-binary on the feminine scale. They can get breast implants or they can get, you know, bottom surgery again.
The opposite of metoidioplasty.
The opposite of metoidioplasty. Well, no.
Is that where they get?
It's not really the
is that where they get the willies the for the metoidioplasty?
No, metoidioplasty is. Oh, this is. I'm trying to find an easy way to explain it. Metoidioplasty is the one where they don't cut skin off; they just use what you have.
That one's called
phalloplasty.
That's
yeah.
it.
Pretty much, they just give the trans woman a vagina.
Yeah. So, interestingly, top surgery wasn't developed for trans people. Actually,
yes.
All of this is what? The only reason I'm really bringing it up is because none of this
was it for breast cancer?
No.
Ah.
Okay, so there are mastectomies, which is sort of removing the breast tissue.
Yeah.
Obviously, top surgery is different to that because you're not just removing all of the breast tissue; you're also sort of sculpting it into a particular look. Yeah. Now, as I said, interestingly, none of this was developed for trans people at all. So you've got this thing called. Gynecomastia?
Yeah. I was expecting you to pronounce it wrong.
I can never remember which way it is. Effectively, that's when someone that is male grows breast tissue through a whole different number of reasons. It could be a hormone imbalance or sort of anything else, old age, lots of these things. And you can grow effectively the full female breasts as a XY male.
Wow, that's what happens to vegan soy boys, doesn't it?
That's what happens to vegan soy boys.
Yeah, soy's got all that estrogen in it.
It doesn't have estrogen in it. It's got plant estrogens. We've spoken about this in the vegans episode, Veganuary. Go listen to that. Uh-huh. Yeah, so not metoidioplasty. Metoidioplasty is probably the only one that was really developed for trans people.
Yes.
For obvious.
Which one is that? Sorry, is that making a vagina?
No.
Metoidioplasty. So phalloplasty is where you get a skin graft. So you get a skin graft from your arm, you turn it into a penis, and you sew it onto yourself. Well, not onto yourself, actually.
Someone else does that. That's not recommended.
That is some skill.
Metoidioplasty.
I'll do it myself.
Out of my way.
Oh, no.
Metoidioplasty is a type of bottom surgery for trans guys or like masculine non-binary people where there is no skin graft per se, but they just use the growth that you get from testosterone and then they mess around with it a bit. You could add balls and stuff. It's kind of just like a micro penis. Right.
So this is what's so fascinating about this, because this is something I didn't know until a couple of years ago when I got in a conversation with, I think, Noah and our friend Phoenix. Which is something that I think people would legitimately find very interesting, which is that when you start taking testosterone as a trans man, you grow a kind of like a penis thing, like a penis type thing.
A little
dicky.
This is
the reason why that's so fascinating in combination with, like you say, Corey, that assigned male at birth bodies are able to grow breast tissue is that really, I think that is the center of any kind of confusion around that results in transphobia, is that actually we aren't male or female. We have certain hormones and certain genetic structures that trigger certain types of growth. And that when you introduce the other type of like an assigned female body to testosterone or an assigned male body to estrogen, they start the process of growing towards male and female. So male and female are more directions or ends of a spectrum than they are clear cut. And that goes against everything we're taught, But it is actually the case, and that there is evidence to that in the fact that people grow body parts that aren't traditionally meant for them when exposed to certain chemicals. And that is fascinating.
Yes, I agree.
I love this game of 4D chess that I've been playing. All of this stuff that I've laid out right now was to set up all of the things you guys have been saying. Genuinely, this is the kind of direction that I want to take it.
Yeah, this is what we do. Ruin Corey's work.
No, honestly, I know that you ruined my work, and I took that into account and put it into my work.
I planned for
this to happen.
Oh, he's evolving.
Oh, that's perfect, because that actually does bring you on to my next point of hormones. So obviously, a lot of trans people use hormones as therapy, but what I want to get into is how hormones actually affect the body. Obviously, there's lots of different kinds of hormones. There's not just the sex hormones, but generally, when we talk about hormones, we talk about the sex hormones. Interestingly, so what you were saying, Luke, about sort of there being a sort of male direction and a female direction, that is kind of true in that in the womb, all people originally are female before birth. Mm. And then it's to do with the...
We're all FTM.
We're all FTM.
Well, no, not the women. God.
You just had to put in more effort and money.
We're all FTM.
Female to male. Yeah.
Everyone's
FTM. Everyone's amazing.
Oh, that means trans women are FTM. Yeah.
No. They just never... yes. No, they didn't grow a penis and then it dropped off, Noah.
The trans is speaking.
Okay, I apologize. Everything you say is gospel.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
You could say that trans women are FTMTF. If effectively, in the womb, you are female. And then what happens is sex differentiation, wherein there are hormones in the womb that... I say hormones in the womb.
You just retrieve them.
No, hold on. Let me say that again.
It's like a top man. You pick out which hormones you want.
I quite like this one.
It'll look good on me.
This is nice.
let me try that again. This is a very difficult topic. Now, this is basically a part one. I cannot do the entirety of sort of sexual dimorphism and sex in one episode. This is just a sort of flying... This is a flying visit to the realm of sex. Now...
Just 101. Trans 101 class.
Just sex 101.
I'll just sex 101.
Just sex 101.
That could be misconstrued.
In and out. That's it. That's all you got to know.
Right.
When mummy and daddy love each other very much.
Okay. The birds. Okay. Right. This is something completely irrelevant, right? But we talk about the birds and the bees. We could not have chosen two animals that are worse for that. Most birds don't have genitalia and bees don't have sex in the way that we have sex. Bees don't have like two sexes. They've got, they can, like, insects can have a different number of sexes.
But bees have a little pricker. And they put things.
That's a sting.
Also, how have you just said birds don't have genitalia and nobody's questioned that?
They have okay, so a lot of birds don't have genitals in the way that we'd consider it. They rub against each other and kind of, they don't have penises. Ducks have penises, but a lot of birds don't have like penises and vaginas.
Like if you had a bottle of water and you wanted to get some of the water into another bottle and you just kind of go like this.
Sure. Except it's covered in feathers. That's what chickens
have
got.
Bottle.
Chickens have got a cloaca, which is like, you know, they're all in one hole for
that,
eggs.
That's what I thought humans had, to be honest. Until I was 11.
My sister thought that too, actually. Yeah. I remember at some point in far too late in her life, she thought there was one hole for everything. And that confused me a lot.
Well, that makes sense though, doesn't it?
Of course. I'm not saying it's... Yeah, just...
If you don't look...
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't look at yourself...
You just assume.
Yeah, no. No.
Or go through any kind of sex education, which we definitely did.
Yeah, true.
I don't know how that happened.
Maybe you did.
Okay, so getting back to the womb, basically, as we know, you've got...
We're all trying to get back to the womb, Corey.
Please.
It's glorious in there.
Please, Mom.
Dear me.
Please.
Stop it. This episode's really gone off the rails very fast. I thought I had control, and you guys snatched it from my grasp.
We're doing our job.
So in the womb, obviously we know that we've got the sort of sex chromosomes. We've got X chromosomes and Y chromosomes. Y chromosomes are like X chromosomes' faulty little brother.
It's missing a bit.
It's missing it.
Ironically.
You know spaghetti hoops?
Yes.
They got those shapes.
Yes.
The letters.
Yes.
That's what I'm picturing right now.
Spaghetti letters.
Spaghetti letters, yeah. X and Y's. Play it around in the
It's
womb.
Interesting that when like you picture an alphabet, you picture alphabet soup. Like,
yeah, I don't actually know where that came from.
Yeah, I do.
Really?
Yeah.
So, back on track. Moving from alphabet soup, you've got X chromosomes and Y chromosomes. So called because actually they do look a little bit like an X and a Y. Most chromosomes look like an X. The Y chromosome is quite literally missing a little bit. Mm.
But it gives you an extra bit. Usually.
Yeah, okay. Jesus. Usually, yeah. So interestingly, it's due to those hormones that you basically differentiate from a sort of female sort of fetus into a male fetus. So effectively, all babies are female originally. And what happens is there is this sort of syndrome called complete androgen insensitivity syndrome, which basically means that you have no sensitivity to sort of testosterone or male sex hormones. So in the womb, despite the fact that you've got XY chromosomes, you present completely female because there is no masculinization, because you basically don't react to those male sex hormones.
So if you took testosterone, would it still just not do anything?
So I've looked into this quite a little bit myself. I'm not entirely sure. It's kind of a spectrum of like of sensitivity to androgens. Mm. So there are so many there are so many different sort of ways that you can have non XX chromosomes and still present completely female, or have XY chromosomes and not present completely male. The idea that sex is XX and XY for sure, it's just not true. So there's more to sex than that.
XX is always women and XY is always men. It's just,
yeah. So even taking trans people out of the equation, that's not always the case. As I said, you start off basically completely female, and the sex hormones are what affect that. So do you guys know what hormones are? Just to start off with.
Chemicals.
I'm going to say. Yeah.
High five.
I can ask you almost any question and the answer would be chemicals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until we get to subatomic particles, everything is chemicals.
Chemicals secreted by a part of your body.
Yeah.
It's the same answer, just a little bit on the end.
Hey, what's this biological chemical? It's a chemical secreted.
Chemical
by
that comes from somewhere.
Yeah. So hormones are chemical messengers that travel throughout the body and coordinate processes like growth, metabolism, fertility, and even sort of sex presentation. So they can influence the immune system and change behavior. They're a really wide-ranging sort of what was that face?
Oh, you just said they can change behavior and you're like mood. When I don't have my testosterone, I want to die.
So what's the difference then, Corey, between a hormone and a neurotransmitter?
So hormones are secreted into the blood and travel to different areas of the body. So they could be secreted by different glands in the body. So there's the endocrine system, which basically means the secreting within system. So you've got different hormonal glands. You've got your thyroid gland. Mm-hmm. You've got testes, ovaries, loads of different parts of your body that secrete different hormones. Those travel in your blood and affect hormone receptors anywhere in your body. Insulin, for example. I'm pretty sure it's a hormone. So, yeah, you guys kind of know what hormones are now. They can influence a lot of things. As I've said, brain signals one of your hormone, your sort of hormone secretors, a hormone gland, which then secretes it directly into the bloodstream, which then affects whichever receptor that hormone is, affects. So, there are sex hormones. You've got the gonads, sort of the testes and the ovaries, and those... probably the ones that we're most familiar with. Those secrete the sex hormones, as they're called. Do you guys know the names of any sex hormones?
Estrogen, testosterone, progesterone.
Ding, ding, ding. Okay, so those are...
Never heard that word in my life.
Never heard progesterone?
No.
How many women do you know?
Yeah.
Not many.
Not even that. Phoenix was on a progesterone shot for almost a year.
Never heard it. I thought it was testosterone.
Oh my god.
Is that the depo thing?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
We had,
I called it depo.
Yeah, we just couldn't take estrogen, so we had to take progesterone. Right.
Yeah, progesterone is basically, it can also be used as a what's it called? Sexy,
contraceptive.
Sexy no kid. That's it.
Sexy no kid.
Sexy no kid. So yeah, there are different kinds of sex hormones. You've got androgens, estrogens, and progestogens. I'm pretty sure you can guess.
I thought it was progestins.
There's like three different names.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So androgens are synthesized in the testes, in the ovaries, and the adrenal glands. That's testosterone is an androgen. Andro coming from male. And interestingly, people might not know this. It's not a case of only men produce testosterone and only women produce estrogen.
We all produce a bit of both, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everyone produces a little bit of both.
There's a balance.
Exactly. There's different levels in sort of between sort of people that are assigned male at birth and people that are assigned female at birth. But everyone has both types of hormone. So in the uterus, DHT, dihydrotestosterone, causes differentiation of a penis, scrotum, and prostate. So yeah, like as I've said, start a female, DHT comes in, you grow that penis, you grow that scrotum, you get that prostate, and then
you get it.
If only I started testosterone in the womb.
Hey, gotta get it early.
Wouldn't that bang? That'd be so sick.
At least start puberty blockers in the womb.
I just wouldn't grow.
So yeah, in the womb, DHT causes the growth of a penis, ovaries, I was going to say, penis, testes, and prostate. But in older age, it can cause baldness and...
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, it's not very good, is it?
No. It goes the other way, doesn't it?
All that privilege.
Take it away.
Balding, prostate growth, and sebaceous gland activity.
Oh, that's being oily, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's like, if you look on your nose, and sometimes if you squeeze your nose, like, this like these little kind of
that's
spot things will come out.
That's why old men do that.
Yeah,
they
sebaceous
all,
filaments.
They all have massive pores in their nose, and then they use them.
I wonder if the... Now, this is a bit of a far-out theory of mine. Maybe it has holds no water whatsoever. But it's always fascinated me that that one of the sort of takedowns that is used against men by people who are understandably angry at men sometimes is like, haha, this person's balding, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like, it's a bit of a low blow, but, you know, whatevs. Men have done enough. And I wonder if, like... I wonder if there's some understanding on a subconscious level that the thing that you're angry about if you are against, like, I have been hurt by men is like the things that make them men, right? Which then manifest into like some kind of relative privilege in the world. And the very thing that makes you into a man or a male, DHT, is then the thing that makes you bald. So maybe that's why people who are understandably angry at men then make fun of baldness, because it's like the thing that giveth the privilege, but then the thing that taketh away.
I would absolutely be for that. I'd be for that theory 100% if we'd known that for all of human history. And
like, doesn't it just mean bald men are the manliest men?
Yeah. Well, no, bald men always seem to be the men that are like trying to be more manly.
Yeah.
It's not even just like your T levels though.
No, it's not.
It's a genetic thing as well. So even if you have really high T levels, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go bald.
So, okay, bear in mind, hormones are very complicated. This is something that we're really simplifying a lot here.
Yeah.
In that, if you think about it, let's look at another hormone, insulin, for example. Now, so you cannot produce enough insulin or produce no insulin at all. That's a type of diabetes. Or you can have an insensitivity to insulin, so your insulin receptors don't really like sort of bind to insulin and like, you know, receive it in the way that they should. Now that can apply to lots of different hormones. So obviously what that shows us is that there's different levels of sensitivity to different hormones in the body. And that also applies to the sex hormones. So if we were to go around the room and take our testosterone levels, there is no telling through sort of our phenotypic features of which person is going to have the highest testosterone count.
It'd probably be me, though.
Probably Noah. When was your last shot?
10 minutes ago.
It was a few days ago. Well, because obviously you guys consistently have consistent T levels.
Yeah.
But I inject myself and then they
shoot. You have consistent T levels? Does it not spike during things like exercise or like sexual arousal or anything?
Oh, yeah. But just in general, you don't.
Right.
Like inject yourself and then
look, your balls aren't producing just a big load of testosterone.
Yeah,
every
and then
month.
It runs out.
and then wait.
Your balls are like, it's testosterone day.
I just meant, are there external circumstances that regulate the production of testosterone?
Yeah. I mean, look, when I say they're regular or consistent, I mean there are cycles. You can produce more or less due to other factors, but they're pretty consistent. It's not a case of. Like injecting every 3 weeks where you get a spike and then you get a trough and then you get another spike.
I read somewhere once that, so like DHT is created in the body from the breakdown of testosterone, which is what causes male pattern baldness.
And
that can be exacerbated and sped up by large amounts of exercise.
Uh-huh. Oh, so I don't know.
I don't know if that's true, but that's what I read.
So I don't know. I don't know the sort of chemical process to produce DHT. What I do know is that androgens are sort of precursors to estrogen.
What do you mean by precursor?
So a precursor is basically just a sort of chemical that can be made into another chemical. So you can aromatize. I don't know. I'm putting it in quotes. It's aromatize. You can basically change. You can basically. Sort of change testosterone, add a few bits, take a few bits away, or change its shape a little bit and turn it into estrogen. Not all of those, obviously. There is one specific pathway to turn testosterone into estrogen. I'm just saying a precursor to a chemical being a precursor to another chemical basically just means that in the body you can produce another chemical from it.
Interesting.
So if you make like a tree, like the body makes this thing that it can turn into three other things, and each of those three things can be turned into three other things.
Oh, yeah.
Like branches out.
So, yeah, as I've said, testosterone is a precursor to estrogen, which is, quite interestingly, if you take too much testosterone, it can be converted into estrogen, because if your testosterone levels are too high, obviously, think about it, your body likes to keep things like leveled out. So if your testosterone levels are super high, like ridiculously high, like you've been injecting yourself with testosterone and you've already got solid testosterone levels, it's going to convert that back into estrogen.
That's why bodybuilders grow boobies.
Is that
why?
Yeah.
I almost go bald and grow boobies.
Yeah.
They get the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, they do.
Fascinating.
It is, yeah. And as I've said, it's testosterone isn't just present in males. It can also be present in females. Now, I just want to clear this up. Throughout this episode, we're going to be using male and female. I'm generally going to be using male as a shorthand for assigned male at birth, and the same for female, shorthand for assigned female at birth, just for simplicity in that say.
He's not saying male is man and female is woman.
We're talking about men. We'll call them men. Yeah, we're talking about women. We'll call them women.
Yeah, exactly. If we're talking about men, call them men. Talking about women, call them women. Male, female.
The sex and gender is not the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
It sounds like an opening for like a really woke song. We're talking about women.
Now get the guitar out. So in females, testosterone can function in libido and sexual arousal.
That's funny.
What are you?
She just laughed. It's just a silence and then.
Yeah, so I think the key point to take away from this is that the sex hormones have multiple functions. For every single person. So it's not just a case of testosterone make man. It's testosterone does a wide variety of things, one of which is make male.
One.
And estrogens. So estrogens are synthesized in all vertebrates and also in some insects.
Why specifically vertebrates?
Well, it just means they've got a backbone.
Yeah, but why?
Women have a spine.
Okay, because
that's so odd.
No, because invertebrates is a massive. Okay, compared to invertebrates, vertebrates is a very small group. If you think about it, vertebrates includes like bony fish and mammals and reptiles and birds and all. Instead of
not jellyfish.
No, cartilaginous fish like sharks, which are mostly cartilage. Do you guys not know
sharks are mostly cartilage?
Do you guys not know that? Yes. Do you guys not know fish?
How is sharks mostly cartilage?
Because they're not above land. They don't have to have a particularly strong structure because they don't have gravity acting on them.
So initially there were like basically two sects. There are two fish kind of split off to be the ones that have like sort of bones and the ones that have just sort of cartilage. Like, because like Luke said, they don't necessarily need bones for the structure. So there's different types of fish in that sense.
If sharks had bones, I think they would sink.
Sharks do have bones.
They'd be so heavy.
Some bones.
Sharks have teeth, yeah.
You're telling me a shark doesn't have a spine?
It has a spine. It's made out of cartilage.
Hold on.
It's like carbon fiber for bones.
So like, right. So you're in your body, Noah, you start out with cartilage, which slowly hardens and becomes bone. Bone is what we call the harder, denser structure that functions. But so like, as you grow older, your nose cartilage turns slowly into bone. It's just a more dense version of the same thing. And if you don't have gravity acting on you as much, because you've also got upthrust acting on you because you're an underwater being, you don't necessarily need as hard a structure. And so you don't necessarily evolve towards having really hard skeleton. It's just softer because it's wasteful to make overly hard skeleton.
So
I think that's how it works.
It makes sense. I just never thought that sharks
don't have bones. And their teeth
that.
Are probably made of bone, I assume. Yeah.
Yeah, so they've obviously got teeth and they do have a skeleton. It's a cartilaginous skeleton. Mm. Basically their skeletons aren't made of bone the way that ours are.
I just thought skeleton meant strictly bone. So when you said sharks didn't have bones, I was like, what?
Well, I mean,
imagine if you listened to this episode of a science show about being trans and you went to get a cup of tea and you came back and talking about the bones structure of sharks.
Interestingly, because sharks don't have bone marrow, they produce red blood cells and other things elsewhere in their bodies. One of those places supposedly are the gonads. Interestingly.
Bloody gonads.
Bloody gonads. So moving on to estrogens, as I've said, estrogens are synthesized in all vertebrates and also some insects. Now, as I was saying, vertebrates in comparison to invertebrates is a tiny, tiny group. If you think about it, invertebrates includes basically all insects, includes crustaceans, like mollusks, anything that doesn't have a spine, that's an invertebrate, and there are loads of them. Mm. Yeah, there are loads
of prime ministers. One of them, actually.
Oh, get political! Hey.
I can't believe the country's being run by a vertebrate.
Wait, what?
Make it make sense.
The country has always been run by vertebrates.
I can't believe that our country's being run by an invertebrate. Cue another canned laughter there. Yeah, great.
Moving on, estrogens. So. In males, estrogens regulate functions of the reproductive system, important to the maturation of sperm. So basically getting sperm from the point of making it to being ready to shoot out and make a baby. That's what estrogen can be used for. And apparently it can also be important for a sort of healthy sex drive as well.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
So estrogen controls sex drive in males, but testosterone controls it in females.
Well, no, I think both control both.
Oh, okay.
So I think the levels of it. So this doesn't necessarily mean that estrogen makes males horny. What it means,
I think it probably does.
Well, dear God,
I'm sure there's a subreddit for that.
what it regulates, so that could be decreasing or increasing. And in females, estrogen is used for a lot of things. Now, there's lots of different estrogens. So there's three majorly naturally occurring estrogens: estrone, estradiol, estradiol. I should really read these beforehand, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
Like read them out loud: estradiol and estriol.
That's what trans women take, the gel. When I went to my last gender appointment, they gave me the wrong leaflet. They gave me an estrogen gel leaflet.
Is that a compliment?
Like, no, thanks.
I feel like that's a compliment.
Do not want to make.
No,
oh, that is a nice compliment, actually, yeah. You
oh, no.
So
she,
well.
She just didn't read it. No, okay. It wasn't. It, yeah.
She didn't read it. It's the
gel,
same. Whatever.
Gel.
It was, yeah, there you go.
That's a hormone.
It'll turn, the testosterone will turn into estrogen anyway.
It'll do something.
Yeah, there's also another type of estrogen called
escape. Is that a thing, or did that just come out of your mouth?
Yeah, it's refining Nemo.
There's also another, which also includes sharks. Full circle.
Also from Finding Nemo.
That's what I just said.
Oh, I thought we were going back to sharks before.
Can you believe Pixar invented sharks?
they didn't exist before.
They did Shark Tales.
That was DreamWorks. Yeah, but they copied Finding Nemo and just put
I watched Shark Tale a few weeks ago, and it was the most disappointing film I've ever seen.
Really? I think it was fantastic.
So bad.
Had a great PS2 game to go along with it.
How high
Yeah, because the whole film looked like a PS2 game.
Which made the PS2 game look amazing by comparison. I'll tell you that.
The fish does look like Will Smith, though, doesn't it?
It looks eerily like Will Smith. Yeah. The one that I don't like is the hot Angelina Jolie fish, because there's no have no right making a fish look that good. Also, Martin Scorsese is a pufferfish for some reason. Do you guys remember that? It's just they stuck his head on a pufferfish.
Didn't he call the Marvel films
again,
bad? He's in
trans people.
Trans people. He was like, this isn't real cinema.
Back to estrogen, guys?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
So there's another type of estrogen called estetrol, which is produced only during pregnancy. So just by sheer sort of quantity, estrogens are present at lower levels than androgens in both men and women. Obviously, estrogens are way lower in males than they are in females. But yeah, there's low levels of estrogens just as a rule. So I'm just going to quickly go over secondary sex characteristics. These are the ones that that aren't basically quite as clear cut as sort of genitals. So your genitals and some other things are your primary sex characteristics. Those are there from birth. Secondary sex characteristics come in puberty. So that's facial hair.
Pubes.
Facial hair for who?
Pubes.
For everyone?
Yes. Well,
yes, actually. That's you've gotten into exactly what I'm getting into.
Wow.
For males, there's a larger chest, hair growth in the armpits, muscle growth, the arms, legs, and shoulders.
Deep voice, right?
Yeah, like a lowering of the voice. Yeah. Like facial hair. Generally, things that we've pretty much all had, like sex education is good. We know what happens at puberty. Mm-hmm. The stuff that happens at puberty for males are their secondary sex characteristics, mm-hmm. and vice versa for females. Now, the interesting thing here is obviously we've already spoken about males growing breast tissue and things like that. So the idea of secondary sex characteristics being solely a sort of strict category between men and women or males and females just isn't really true. I mean, you've obviously heard of like bearded ladies, but generally women can grow or females can grow facial hair to some degree and grow body hair.
It was always weird in sex ed. They were like, and the boys will start growing armpit hair and stuff. It's like, the girls also start growing
but they'll
that,
shave it off.
But they'll shave it off.
Doesn't exist.
So it doesn't actually happen.
No, but like obviously, like they'll still like they're like if you're female, you can still grow facial hair as well. Like that's not completely unheard of.
But we don't want to see it, so we're not going to teach it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the thing is, what's interesting here is that all of these changes that happen between males and females aren't necessarily a very strict this only happens to males and this only happens to females. There's this kind of like sort of little curve in the middle where mostly males and then a little bit of crossover and then mostly females.
You know, a normal distribution.
Yeah, like exactly. That's exactly what I'm getting to. Yeah, look. So my point here is more that we often think of sex as being very strict. You're check a box. You're either one or the other.
The other, yeah.
But actually, it makes more sense to look at sex as a very, very common set of characteristics. Two very, very common sets of characteristics with sort of crossover in between.
Like a Venn diagram.
Okay.
Kind of.
Oh, yeah, no, I get that.
You know, but like a gradient Venn diagram.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's a bell curve. A normal distribution.
It's very difficult to describe on an audio format what it looks like.
I'm just trying to explain it to people who don't know what that is.
It's like you've got two hills that are next to each other, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah? That makes sense to everyone? Yeah, so moving on from that, I want to talk about trans brain. So I'm sure you guys have heard of the idea of sex differences in brains. There's a male brain and there's a female brain. Men have got stronger right brains. Women have got stronger left brains. And men have got bigger brains than women. And that's just the way it is, because your brain is different depending on what sex you are.
Pink brains and blue brains.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The Victorians initially actually had boys having pink brains and girls having blue brains, but they decided to swap that a little bit later. Fun science fact that you didn't
know.
Just to shake it up.
Because pink was a bold masculine color, and then
was
somehow.
It?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It was for the sign to men because it was bold and it was bright. And
whereas, like, baby blue was kind of seen as a softer, more feminine color. And then that was changed.
Interesting. It's funny.
It's almost like there's no weight to any of these arbitrary associations.
It's almost like it means nothing at all.
But no, honestly, I think color attribution. So, for instance, purple used to be a royal color, because it used to be very expensive to make purple pigments. Mm. And so the only people that could get purple.
It's a really
purple.
Nice color, though.
Yeah, it's lovely.
That's why we use it.
Oh, yeah, we do use it, don't we? So the only reason that purple was a royal color was because it was expensive. And, like, there is no reason for purple to be a royal color other than the fact that it was expensive to make at one point. That's quite literally it. So moving on from that. I've already spoken about complete androgen insensitivity syndrome. And so they did a study which kind of showed that there was a role of sex hormones in sexual differentiation of some structure in the white matter of the brain. So basically, in some parts of your brain, sex hormones do have an effect on difference in structure. But there are also effects that are outside of those sex hormones. So not all of the differences that you can see between brains are due to those sex hormones. And there was also a sort of big study in 2005 that was used as this sort of groundbreaking piece of there's a male brain and a female brain that used 21 men and 27 women, which is a tiny, tiny experiment. And they showed a difference between male and female brains there. But I've got a couple articles that I've looked at, and there's a few more from 2018, 2015, that basically kind of look at all of these studies and do a meta-analysis, which is basically when you take a lot of studies and look at all of the results and see what picture that paints.
Put them all together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically what these kind of meta-analyses have found is that you would generally expect that as the sample size increases, the differentiation is more apparent. But actually, that's not necessarily the case. So what they're basically saying with these meta-analyses is that the difference between male and female brains is less of two distinct categories and more kind of picking and choosing different sort of attributes. So there could potentially be a sort of spectrum of like male brain to female brain, but that it's not a very strict sort of you either have a male brain or a female brain. So I see a lot of people saying that I'm trans because I've got a male brain, or I'm trans because I've got a female brain. And the thing is, when you look into the science of that, it doesn't necessarily back that up as much as you'd think. And there's also the aspect of a lot of this has been guided by sort of sexist rhetoric in the first place. If you already are looking for differences between males and females,
you're gonna find
a difference. Like if you find differences, you might end up attributing that to sort of biological sex or chromosomes rather than other attributes that are present.
Well, there could be like environmental factors, surely.
Well, there
if
are
men,
environmental
like,
factors.
Like males
yeah.
and females are raised so differently and yeah, experience differences.
Mm-hmm. There are environmental factors, and actually, they find that. So I think they did a study on the amygdala, which obviously processes sort of I think certain kinds of emotion, and they found that apparently. The amygdala was bigger in males and in females, but when you adjusted for the increased size of male brains, like it was
big brains.
Yeah, there wasn't actually that much of a difference. The thing is that there are you can kind of look at overall sort of difference between male and female brains, but attributing that solely to sort of sex doesn't really add up. This is one of those ones that we don't quite know, so I can't give you a very solid answer saying yes, male female brains exist. Or no, they don't. It's kind of more of a
perhaps.
Who knows?
Quick question, kind of just yes, for a Just purely for a clarification perspective and for my wanting to understand better as well, do you think there is any possibility that, I'm conscious of how I word this question because it's definitely a potentially problematic question, but I'm just asking it out of interest and understand, to a certain extent, understanding how scientific bias also creeps in. Is there any, right now in our world, there is not very much of a desire to find differences between male and female brains because our political sort of direction is towards pointing out and finding ways in which we are the same for very, very good reasons. Mm-hmm. Do you think that affects in any way which type of studies get funding and whether studies are amplified more or sort of pushed aside because they don't find the desirable results?
I think ultimately that's something that can affect either side of the argument. I think for a long time that affected in one way of,
yeah,
you're looking for male and female brains, so things to the contrary might not not be public. There is a sort of publication bias. If you're looking for something, we could do a whole episode on publication bias, but if you're looking for something and you find results that kind of get towards that point and then you publish them with those positive results, generally the ones that end up getting published frequently are the ones with those positive results. So you can then see a trend that might not actually be there. I don't know necessarily if that bias is influencing the current sort of studies. I think potentially, because obviously doing studies on, for instance, people like sort of women with X, people that present female, and people that are biologically female with XY chromosomes, so people with complete androgen insensitivity syndrome, doing studies like that show us more than we would have known before. Mm. So I don't necessarily think that this sort of political climate is pushing those studies forward.
I just wondered if it's possible.
No, it's absolutely a possibility. Yeah. I think one thing we need to really remember is that we making this podcast and potentially also the people listening to this podcast as well are we're almost in an echo chamber of sorts. So we don't necessarily represent the views of the scientific community or the community at large. So just because those are our views doesn't necessarily mean that those are the ones that are getting pushed through. And this is a really difficult thing because we don't have a huge wealth of studies that very conclusively say one thing or the other. It's very difficult to tell where that bias is coming in. I think the best way to kind of, we're never going to get rid of bias fully, but I think with good scientists and with good meta-analysis, we can try and see past any potential bias.
It's also absolutely impossible for us to do a study on differences between male and or assigned male and assigned female brains, because if we, for example, found, like Noah touched on, if we did find a difference between assigned male and assigned female brains, that might be because of how they were raised, causing those sections of the brain to grow more. So we can't do a study on like a completely blank, unaltered brain.
Test babies. Yeah.
No, well, see, this, this is the thing.
Babies don't have it.
Because babies' brains are just different.
Super.
Even if you tested babies, they still have genetic markers in the form of epigenetics that have come from the parents that have grown up in our society.
And also bear in mind that babies haven't gone through puberty yet, so haven't really differentiated sexually other than their primary sex characteristics. I think it's a very complex issue, and I think look, this is not to say that there aren't that sex hormones or sex doesn't affect your sort of brain structure. Clearly, there are some effects, but going as far as to saying there are male and female brains doesn't necessarily reflect the science. And also saying that sex is a very strict two-category system is also not necessarily biologically sound.
And in an ideal Western world, even if 95% of the brains of one sex were one way, you don't want to label that other 5% that aren't that way in a way that then limits their life opportunity.
Yeah, it's very easy to think of male and female as two very distinct and separate groups with phenotypes that you only see in one and the other. The fact is that there is kind of there is a spectrum of physical sex in that you can have people that are male that grow less facial hair and people that grow more facial hair. And there's overlap with people that are female that grow more facial hair than people that are male. And all the way, like, there is a lot of overlap in the middle between what we would call male and what we'd call female. I just think that that's interesting, that that's something that is overlooked so often. I think we like to categorize things as people, and it makes sense why we like to categorize things, but sometimes that doesn't reflect the actual data in front of us.
So why, according to science and your research, why are trans people trans to the best of our knowledge so far?
Though there are different theories. There are theories about hormonal imbalances in the womb. There are theories about brains being more similar to brains of the opposite sex. There are lots of theories out there. There is not one that I want to say this is the one. There's none of them that I want to put all my chips in on. I don't think that we're there with the research yet. I don't think it makes sense to make a bold claim on it yet. I will answer your question with a
no.
So that means then, just so I understand properly, that means that because for many years, for many decades, we treated trans people as mentally unwell, and we tried to convert them, and we tried to do all sorts of dreadful things. And the current best idea of how to approach this is that we go and say the best way of coping with this, with the gender dysphoria, is to have the person transition and have there to be a societal acceptance of it. And that's because that's not because of any specific scientific understanding. It's because that is the best way to make the person happy and to make them less likely to commit suicide.
Yeah, look, so I think there are two key points here, and I just want to quickly touch on them. For one thing, the best route for all trans people is not complete medical transition. That's just not the case. And looking at being trans as a purely medical or scientific thing, I think, is an unhealthy way of looking at it. That's my own personal viewpoint. In the same way that I don't think we should look at sort of sexualities or anything else like that as from a purely medical standpoint.
Well, I think it's more that, like, for most people who are trans, gender dysphoria is like a very significant thing in their life, and it's all well and nice people like acknowledging that you're actually a man and not a female, even if you were born a female. But for a lot of people, the gender dysphoria is mainly like focused around like sex characteristics, and that's a suitable way to treat it, but obviously not everybody feels that way, so it's kind of like we're doing the best we can.
Yeah,
because nobody really knows anything. I feel like a lot of people view being trans as one exact same experience, when for each trans person it's a completely different experience, and trying to suggest that like this is the one way to be trans and this is the one way to like treat being trans, it's just like it's just not the right way to go about it. Because sure, if you thought like, oh, being trans is because of this, so let's treat all of them like this, that might not necessarily help a lot of trans people.
That is really interesting. Like, I think, yeah, saying that there's one root cause for transness kind of ignores like kind of a lot of the a
it's
lot
like
of what
there's
we,
one cause for cancer out of
it. Yeah, exactly. Or one cause for being gay, or that just doesn't really make sense with what we know about sort of humans and biology and all of that. I think the one takeaway from this episode is categorization isn't always the best way to deal with data.
Yes,
right.
I think even if there was just one root cause, it still wouldn't necessarily mean that there's one like treatment for it
or one experience. Yeah. I think that like I said, viewing it as purely medical isn't necessarily the way to go. I think that the sort of medical response right now of providing the best treatment for each person makes sense. Providing surgeries where those are needed, providing hormone therapy when that's needed, that seems to make sense. I think the sort of medical response and the scientific research, they don't necessarily need to go hand in hand, in that we don't need to be researching so we can figure out how best to treat transness. I just believe that we should research a lot of things, because it increases our understanding, which is a great thing. Knowledge is almost inherently
I think it's more of
a powerful thing to have.
It's treating people on an individual basis, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. To treat each person to their individual needs and research humanity as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you do discover that there's this cure, I'm sure not all trans people would be like, oh, that's the best way to go about it. Because obviously not everybody's going to want...
It's like the X-Men. It's like the X-Men. It's like X-Men 3, The Last Stand.
Yeah, I have no idea what that means at all.
They made a cure for being an X-Man, and not everyone wanted it.
All right.
I guess all I was, you know, and I'm trying to put this in the best possible way, because I don't actually have any opinion here. I'm just trying to understand it. The thing that I'm trying to work out is that I don't necessarily conceptualize this as I conceptualize this as somebody goes to a doctor, someone they trust, a teacher, whoever they go to talk to about coming out, and the main thing is I'm dissatisfied with my current circumstance. That and that dissatisfaction comes from the form of the body that they're in, and what I'm wondering is how is the best way to make this person and help this person to be in a state where they are no longer dissatisfied with their life. And at the moment, the best science we have and the best understanding we have is to help that person to transition into however they feel most comfortable.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think it's for any individual person to dictate how we should view this. Obviously there are people that view being trans as a medical condition, and if that's something that helps them, or if that's something that makes sense to them, then yeah, absolutely go for that. There are also other people that want to sort of demedicalize the trans identity, which for them, if that makes sense, then yeah. I don't think that there needs to be a very strict sort of deciding what being trans is. I think it's such a personal experience for each person, at least from all of the people that I've spoken to. It's such a personal experience for each person. Labeling it sort of medically or scientifically kind of undermines the idea of it just of it being an identity.
Right, sure. Like, I've never actually, you are the first person I've ever heard discuss, this is maybe a testament to how little I understand this, but you're the first person I've ever heard discuss being trans as anything other than a thing that is dealt with from a medical perspective. And that's really sad. And I'm glad we're talking about this.
I mean, look, put it this way. There could be many, many different, and I'm going to get into this next week, but there could be many, many different reasons for people being gay, bisexual, lesbian, or anything like that. Mm. And we tend not to focus on the why, because the way to make people sort of comfortable with those identities is just to not be mean to them.
Not question the validity of your experience.
Whereas right. there's an yeah, added great. Element, there's an added element with being trans, which can include a medical element, which then... I think it's sort of muddied the waters in a sense.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool.
All you have to do is use the pronouns. Great news.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Or hit to Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I'm not Corey everywhere.
I'm Jampkin everywhere.
I'm Luke Cupworth everywhere.
I'm the Finn in most places, just not on Twitter, where it's no Finn Adams.